You please identify yourselves and the party you're representing. We are making a recording of the arguments this morning, which will be available on our website shortly after your arguments. Please make your arguments at the center podium. That's where we have our recording capability. Appellant will have 15 minutes for argument, respondent will have 15 minutes, and then appellant, you'll have 5 minutes to present any rebuttal argument that you might have. Those are the comments I have for you. Are you both ready to go? Okay, then you may begin with your arguments.
Whenever the court is ready, may it please the court, counsel. My name is Benjamin Letcher with the Ferdinand Peters Law Firm, here today on behalf of Jacob Roebuck and Roebuck Automotive LLC, which does business as Prime Motors. This case involves the Federal Drivers Privacy Protection Act, which I'll try to refer to as the DPPA. Which was passed in 1994 to protect the privacy of information submitted in the license and registration process. Roebuck and Prime Motors bring this certiorari appeal to appeal a decision by the Department of Public Safety, DPS, to revoke his access, Jacob Roebuck's individual access to the MinDrive system, which is necessary to operate a car dealership. DPS revoked his access following an audit which revealed two searches made with respect to a 97 Chevy and a 2011 GMC. DPS concluded those searches violated the DPPA, and that's 18 USC 2721 at SEC, which essentially is also codified into Minnesota law pursuant to section 171.12 subdivision 7, so a violation of the federal law is also a violation of Minnesota law. Section 2721 establishes a general principle that personal information about individuals may not be shared except according to 14 exceptions. Generally, the 14 exceptions are to be broadly interpreted to allow, you see the word frequently used, essentially unfettered access by DPS and those which DPS permits to use the information according to those 14 exceptions. And then the revocation occurred in this case because in addition to the penalties afforded by federal law, Minnesota law section 171.12 provides that revocation must occur for a, quote, willful violation of the DPPA. And I just want to focus, I know there's been briefing, but on the principal way in which DPS has acted in an arbitrary and capricious manner in revoking Roebuck's access. And that's because DPS has taken, instead of a broad approach, an overly narrow approach to the 14 possible exceptions to the general rule. And this overly restrictive approach by DPS is especially evident in this case, both generally and then specifically with respect to how it deals with the applicable exceptions. Generally, and I know it's fairly evident from the subject matter, it's worth emphasizing that the DPPA was enacted to protect individuals from government intrusion on their liberty and privacy. And here, DPS is using the DPPA to intrude on Roebuck's ability to operate his small business due to his access of records related to transfers of vehicles, two vehicles, once owned by his business, Prime Motors, which incidentally involved access of his own data because he'd also previously owned the vehicles. DPS insists that this ironic and absurd result is mandated by the plain language of the DPA, but that's only due to the overly restrictive interpretation that DPS gives. So specifically as to those exceptions, DPS has honed in on two of the possible exceptions, and that's at 2721B1 and 3. and then it construes those exceptions narrowly. And I'll first address how DPS has taken an overly narrow approach to these two exceptions. Then I'll also address how two additional exceptions left unaddressed by DPS are also applicable, and that's 2721B2 and then 2721B5. And finally, I'll address the remedy for the overreach by DPS due to its overly restrictive interpretation of the exceptions. While this court would be likely within its authority to simply remand the matter because DPS has failed to adequately explain how it arrived at its conclusion in a way that's not contrary to law, this court should simply reverse the decision because it's evident based on the record, particularly in light of the overly narrow approach to the exceptions, that the revocation decision is in any event contrary to law and thus arbitrary and capricious. So the two principal ways in which DPS construes the exceptions too narrowly, but first, it appears to focus or argue that even if one has a legitimate business interest purpose to access data, in this case, Prime Motors had a business purpose to ensure it had properly documented transfers of vehicles it previously owned, including the Chevy and the GMC, that the business purpose is eviscerated if accessing the data also results in exposure to data on an individual owner of the business, in this case because Roebuck also previously owned these vehicles. And this construction excludes too much conduct based on the plain language of the statute by making what would otherwise be a valid business search invalid merely and ironically because the business owner would then be exposed to their own data, something the DPPA was not intended to prevent. And it's absurd to penalize a person who has some valid business purpose to access data only because that business person would then be incidentally exposed to their own data. The 14 exceptions are intended to permit access to the entire vehicle record, even though every aspect of the vehicle record may not be useful. There must just be one valid purpose under the plain language. So thus, the only question should be whether Prime Motors would have a valid business purpose under one of the exceptions, and if so, it does not matter that every aspect of the vehicle record is not useful to Prime Motors. So here, with respect to section B1, the exception at B1, DPS appears to construe the broad exception permitting, quote, any use by government agency or entity acting on behalf of such agency to access data in carrying out its functions. So that would include a dealer who's acting on behalf of the DPS to ensure that the vehicle records are properly documented as part of its regular business. DPS says that only will permit a dealer to mark vehicles held for resale or place some other flag in the record so they can pull up the record and mark that they're holding it for resale, but that any other access, such as the conduct in this case of just affirming that any flags or action that had been put on the record by the dealer had been properly done, that that's not part of the exception. Well, it's part of the plain language that it's carrying out its functions. So there's no reason to make an overly restrictive bar when this is already supposed to be a broad exception. Then with respect to 2721B3, which is the exception that DPS focuses on, if Prime Motors had a valid business purpose to verify that the information submitted when it transferred the vehicles was not incorrect in some way, then a valid business purpose exists regardless of whether the owner, either because they're a business owner interested in their own property, their business, or because they're a former owner of the vehicle, also saw their own data in the search. And then finally, even with respect to the sections which DPS does not address, while perhaps not as clearly applicable.
Counsel, yeah. With respect to these other factors, did you raise this with the agency prior to them making their decision?
Well, I think the record shows that I was trying to get the agency to explain what the rationale for their decision was, and it was unclear to me, based on the record, what law they were specifically. I mean, if you look at their policies, they're fairly vague, and that goes to the willfulness component that I don't think the court needs to get to. But I mean, it would make sense for an agency to have somewhat vague and loose policy, including because the agency itself may face a claim that it's violated the DPPA, and it's going to have a good qualified immunity claim if it has nice open policies that just basically describe what business purpose you must have, and that you can't have merely a personal reason for accessing data. But, you know, I kind of look at it as, so I still don't know to this day exactly, it looks like the DPS is saying certainly 1 and 3 are exceptions which could be applied. And then, you know, there is some statutory authority for 2, and then 5, just based on the plain language, could be applicable as well. But I hope I'm not going around too much. But yes, in my brief, I didn't say these are the 4 reasons that the government is giving, because it was unclear what their reasoning was, and we've been trying to find that out. So now it appears that they're saying that it's that only those 2, 1 and 3, would be potentially applicable exceptions. But I'm just talking about 2 and 5 based on the plain language, that, you know, 2 says it's for use in connection with matters of motor vehicle or driver safety. B5 is authorization for use in research activities. And really, I don't think you need to get to 2 or 5 because you only need 1 applicable exception. But I also bring up these other exceptions to point out that, you know, these are all, with the exclusion of some, I think it gets towards 11 and 13. There are certain riskier authorizations in the exceptions, which are then narrowed by requiring some kind of individual consent, such as with the bulk releases of information. But these other exceptions are fairly broad. And so what I'm urging is that based on, now that I know that we're only talking about 2721 as the law, as incorporated into Minnesota law, that my client is alleged to have violated, if I look at that law, it's evident that there are multiple exceptions. And so then the second issue that I wanted to address, beyond the fact that if you look at the plain language, there's these 4 potentially applicable exceptions which would make the access permitted, you can tell that the DPS is not only just overly narrowing these exceptions, but they're actually adding additional hurdles or barriers, you know, sort of further narrowing them. If you look at the record, and that's at 118 to 119, DPS was fixated on the fact that in order to locate the 2 particular vehicles, Roebuck entered his own name and driver license number to get there.
Well, he did more than that. He entered just his last name also.
Correct.
Which would have pulled up more data than just his own name or his own individual identifying information.
Correct. Well, the record shows what it pulled up, and it pulled up no private data whatsoever. So when he searched by his last name, it pulled up make and model of certain vehicles and a city where each of those vehicles would be located. So based on the definition of private data, that search wasn't a violation at all. And I don't think they're alleging that it is. They're only alleging that So he initially did the search wrong by putting in his first and last name, and because it was supposed to be last name, first name, that populated nothing. Then he put in just his last name, and then he saw the two vehicles, which he could identify as the owner of Prime Motors as these two vehicles just by make and model and city. All the other vehicles, he wouldn't have been able to identify any personal information. And then from there, he narrowed the search further to only access those two vehicles previously owned by himself and Prime Motors. So my understanding is that the government, DPS, is only claiming that the two searches where he pulled up the actual vehicle information for those two vehicles, that those are the only two unauthorized searches. So in my point, and I see that I only have 30 seconds and I can talk with it more, my point is just that DPS is trying to penalize conduct by saying, well, you didn't document your search well enough. That's what DPS was concerned about. DPS was concerned about the manner in which he got to the information. But the focus has to be on what information did he actually access? And did he have a valid business purpose? And under any of those four exceptions, he did. And so I see that my time is up.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Corey Marsalek. I represent Respondent, Department of Public Safety. We are asking this court to affirm DPS's decision to permanently revoke JR's access to the driver and vehicle information system because DPS's decision was neither arbitrary and capricious, and it was supported by substantial evidence. DPS properly revoked JR's access for searching his full name, his last name, and his driver's license number to access personal information to determine his personal liability for a vehicle that he personally owned. State and federal law strictly prohibit this unauthorized use of the database. Access to the database is limited. And DPS regularly advises users of what those limits are. The DPPA and the state law provide penalties for this unauthorized use, and DPS requires users to review and acknowledge what those limits are before they access the database.
Would this have been a violation if, and this is a hypothetical, so I won't necessarily commit you to it, but would it have been a violation if he had searched using his name for a vehicle that had last been owned by the company and not by him personally?
If the company was the sole owner of the vehicle, and I'm kind of altering the hypothetical a little bit, but if the company was the sole owner of the vehicle, then it might not be a violation because he could plausibly assert to DPS that he was accessing the vehicle for the legitimate business purpose of determining what the dealership's liability or something related to dealership business.
So is the material fact then that the vehicle was owned by him personally and not the business? Is that really what sort of takes this from something that may not have been a violation of the policy to something that is a violation?
In this case, yes, because the case law we cite under the DPPA articulates that if the entity does not have a legal interest in the information, then it's not a legitimate business purpose for that entity to access that information. So for him to claim that he was trying to access this information by, again, searching his personal name and his driver's license number to determine whether or not he had personal liability, for him to then come in and say, well, I was doing this to determine the dealership's liability, that doesn't pass muster under the DPPA case law that we've cited. And then to address,
just a further hypothetical, because at least one of these vehicles at one point was owned by the dealership. What if he had searched the VIN number of the dealership for a vehicle that, you know, was at one point owned by the company and then owned by him personally? Would that have been a violation?
In that situation, in that hypothetical, is the vehicle at the time personally owned only by him, or is it owned by him and the dealership?
Well, under the facts in this case, I think that it wasn't owned by either. The allegation is that he's doing this search to make sure that title has properly transferred to a different owner. So if he was concerned that the business had liability because there hadn't been a transfer, if he had searched for the VIN number of this particular vehicle and then looked at it, would that have been a violation? Or because it had transferred to him, so I guess my question is, because it had transferred to him personally, if he had searched the VIN number, would that have been a violation?
If he accessed that data, yes.
Okay.
Because, again, the dealership does not have a legal interest in the vehicle, so when he's accessing this information for a vehicle that he owns personally, he's accessing personal information without an authorized use under the DPPA. And then to address your earlier questions about the other permissible uses that a realtor has articulated this morning, those were not raised at any point during the audit process or in briefing, the B1, B2, or B5 exceptions. And I think that, you know, from the outset of the audit, from the very first email that DPS sent to Mr. Roebuck, and I believe it's on page 64 of the record, it specifically articulated that the issue was whether or not there was a legitimate business purpose under B3. In every communication that DPS had with both realtor and realtor's attorney, they specifically said, our issues are that you identified that you were doing this for the business, but you searched your name, your last name, and your driver's license number for a vehicle you own personally. The business purpose exception has been very clearly the issue in this case from the outset. There's no, I don't understand the argument that DPS's methodology was unclear, and they've been very clear about what the permissible use issue has been since the beginning of the audit process.
So procedurally, you're saying once the audit began, it was relator's responsibility to identify or to argue to the agency what the legitimate business purpose was, which of the what exception it claimed it fit into, and then the agency was making a decision based on the information presented by the relator as to the business purpose.
That's my understanding, yes, because the DPS runs this audit. They see that there's a search for something that appears impermissible under state and federal law. They reach out to the individual who accessed it, and they say, you know, what's going on? What was the basis for the search? And then at that point, it would be the party with the information about why they conducted that search to articulate what the basis for that search was.
Do you have any case law, or is there any case law on who bears the burden in showing a legitimate business purpose under the statute?
I don't have any case law on that front either. I guess I would say, like, as far as the burdens go, assuming without conceding, it might be, like, ultimately DPS's burden to defend its decision. So the DPS concludes that there was no legitimate business purpose. I think that might be DPS's decision to support. I don't think it's necessary for this court to reach the burden question in this specific case, because I think the evidence in the record supports DPS's decision either way, that there was no legitimate business purpose based on the fact that he was searching his driver's license number for a vehicle that he personally owned. And as he admitted, the trigger for this access was the fact that he received a late registration notice in his name for a vehicle that he personally owned.
And then I guess one last procedural question. Do you know administratively, so what I hear relator saying is it wasn't clear which exceptions DPS was wanting us to apply. DPS then issues a decision. Does DPS have an administrative procedure where relator could have then gone and argued to the agency there's other exceptions that apply rather than coming to this court first?
My understanding from the agency and from the Minnesota statutes on DPS is that the audit process is the process where is essentially the administrative review process where the individual could assert the basis for the search, and then They collaborate with DPS to determine whether or not there was a violation, and if DPS ultimately concludes a violation, then the next recourse is a writ of certiorari to this court.
So there is no, you know, opportunity to request reconsideration on the basis that it would fit into another exception?
To my knowledge, no, but I think as the record reveals, that the audit process itself is fairly collaborative and extensive. They went back and forth with both Realtor and his attorney for a couple of months. So I think that there's my understanding from reviewing the record is that there's a pretty inclusive and exhaustive process where if somebody wanted to assert an exception or wanted to talk to DPS about it, they have ample opportunity to do so.
You may not know the answer to this question, but how often are individuals represented by counsel in these situations?
I don't have the data on that. I don't have the data on the number of violations they have or the number of times that there's an audit conducted where they then rescind their violation. So, to answer your question, I don't have the answer to that.
I guess before I get you too off track, I do have one sort of factual question. So when you say that the relator accessed protected personal data, are you simply talking about him accessing his own data, or was there data of other individuals that Mr. Roebuck accessed?
It was his own data. Now, in this specific situation, I believe the agency is hinging on the fact that once he clicks on the vehicle and accesses the vehicle information that includes his personal information, that's the violation. You know, a realtor's counsel kind of touched on this topside, and there's a question, at least in my mind, about whether or not if you were to search a person's name and then a vehicle or were to come up, whether or not the fact that you know that information would be contained in the answer to that search query would be a violation. Again, that's not something this court has to reach because the access of that personal information is in the vehicle record is a violation of the DPPA.
And then I do have one more question with regard to willfulness. It does seem to me that Mr. Roebuck had access to the system for many years, didn't have a violation. Had this violation come up, it does seem that he was very honest about what had happened and very transparent about what had happened. I think that there is some degree that the consequence of this seems harsh, but is this a pretty hard and fast rule that the agency plays with all dealerships? Are all dealers treated the same in terms of this, or are there exceptions for people making mistakes in this?
To my understanding, well, as far as mistakes go, I think that might get to willful, and that would kind of be something that the agency would consider during the audit process. Did somebody, I think the hypothetical that I tangled with in my mind is, let's say a dealer is dealing with a customer and they're, searching them to verify information that's been given to them, and they absentmindedly put in their own driver's license information instead of the other individuals. That might be accidental and not willful, and the agency might, in that situation, rescind any violation based on the audit process. Now, again, in this case, that's not the situation because the audit was, he made that search based on receiving the late registration notice for a vehicle that he owned in his personal capacity, and then he searched, his name, his last name, his full name, and his driver's license number to obtain information for a vehicle that he admits that he knew he owned in his personal capacity, not in the dealership's capacity.
I noticed in your brief you used a foreign case to define willful, to provide your legal definition of willful. What is the sort of working definition of that term that DPS uses?
My understanding is that DPS uses the term as it was defined by the Minnesota Supreme Court in INRI AD, that you have to be aware of your duty and then make a deliberate choice to violate that duty. So obviously in this situation, getting back to Judge Larson's question, Realtor had asserted that he was unaware of the fact that he's not supposed to do this, but the fact that he signed multiple acknowledgments indicating that he had reviewed and understood the policies and the state and federal laws that prohibited him from doing what he did, and the fact that in the record on page 64, the DPS sent an email reminder at the beginning of November, the month that he later committed the violation, articulating that, reiterating the facts, the FAQs, that you're not supposed to do this, and if you have a situation where you need to access your own records, there are processes for doing that, including emailing the data practices unit at DPS in order to work out how to go through that situation. So I think in that, so for in this case, the agency made the credibility determination that it was not credible for him to assert that he didn't know that he couldn't do this based on the multiple acknowledgments and the email reminders that DPS had sent him. And then, you know, to further articulate about the penalties, that this is a statutory penalty that the legislature implemented. If a person willfully accesses the data in violation of state and federal law, it's DPS is required to permanently revoke them. Whether, I mean, there are situations where that may seem harsh, but that's the choice the legislature made, and I think that's an understandable one given the personal information at stake under both the DPPA and underneath state law. This is information that yes, there are a number of exceptions, permissible uses, and they can be broadly construed. Those broad constructions still have to conform to the statute, and both the DPPA and state law provide for fairly significant penalties to both DPS and to the individuals who violate this because they want to protect this information. This goes back to when they changed, as Realtor mentioned, they changed the law in 1994 based on impermissible accesses that people were using this information to stalk individuals. This is information that's highly sensitive, and they do not want people to access this information unless they have a permissible use. And on that basis, we would ask this court to affirm DPS's decision to revoke JR's access. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, and I'll just try to focus on those few topics that came up. As far as the burden question goes, I mean, under the recent PolyMet case and all the other cases, it's the agency's burden to establish the basis for its decision. And what I'm saying is that, if you look at the decision, the decision does refer to B1 and 3. It's saying access is permitted to place a held for resale or other type of title notification, and it's saying what access is permitted for. So it's talking about those two statutes in there, but if you look at the record, the entire time that, before the decision was issued, we're trying to find out, all that the DPS is coming back with is, what's your business purpose?
But my understanding of the PolyMet case, however, is that the relator had submitted some information to the agency, and the agency didn't consider the information that had been submitted. And here, I think that what the respondent is arguing is that there was no information submitted by your client to show what the legitimate purpose for these searches were, and that's what would distinguish it from that line of cases.
I'll try my best to be helpful here, but I see the business purpose, frankly, is an overarching idea that's over all 14 exceptions as they might be applicable. Like, you have to be carrying out your regular business function. So if it's research activities, it's research for a business reason. If it's any of the exceptions, there has to be a business purpose. So when DPS is asking, what's your business purpose? Well, before I was involved, my client already candidly explained exactly what he had done. And so it's his business purpose was that these were two vehicles that he knew that he had owned and the business had owned previously, and he was getting a notice for one that it was still registered in his name. And when he searched for that one vehicle, there were two vehicles that were showing up as somehow still indexed One evidently was indexed to both names, and one was indexed to his name. And it seems just eminently rational from a business person's perspective to say, well, I'll just go pull up those records using a logical method and determine if there's some information which was improperly put into that record. And so he does that, and that's his business purpose. And that business purpose is applicable to all the exceptions that I talked about, 1, 3, 2, and 5. It's the business purpose which would give him the right to access under those exceptions. And so, nevertheless, if you look, and if you look at the rationale which I pointed out before, the emphasis of DPS was never on, you know, this is a law, 2721, and you didn't fit into this exception. Rather, they were really focused on that my client put in his name and his own driver's license to access these records.
But you don't dispute that that it's a violation for him to look at these records for his own personal use?
Merely for his own personal use. If he was doing it just for his own personal use, yes. And that's what I'm saying, is that he has a rational business purpose for the search. And it just, and again, I get it. You know, the agency has you know, a fair amount of leeway, but I'm saying that the agency has made its decision after having narrowly construed these exceptions to be contrary to law. And it has not, and so in, it's, I want to talk myself in a circle here, but it's, I see that I'm running out of time. We're just simply requesting that the decision be reversed, because I do think all of those exceptions apply under, you know, the way the law is plainly written. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to the court, and we will issue our decision within the statutory time frame.